You are listening to KKUP Cupertino, 91.5 FM, People's Radio, and it's time for the Vibrational Voyage program. This program follows Orient Express, which happens 10 to 11 every Tuesday evening, and now it's Vibrational Voyage for this next hour. Tonight, more Terrence McKenna. And it's something I haven't played for you before. I think you'll really enjoy it. I think it's very fitting for the equinox. It's some really nice segments on Time Wave Zero. And I did a little bit of additional research and brought you some information about the sky, what's happening with the sky. So I'll come back in a minute, tell you about what's happening with the sky. And it's actually quite a lot. If you haven't seen the moon yet, you should go out and see it, because it's about 23 hours from a conjunction with Jupiter. So you can see that developing tonight and watch it actually happen tomorrow night. It'll occur at about 10 p.m. And the moon will also conjoin Uranus tomorrow night. Of course, we don't see Uranus very clearly. It's not visible to the naked eye. But that's happening very, very soon. It's the same hour. Tomorrow night, Jupiter and Uranus are very close right now. So I'll tell you more about all that in just a minute. Thanks for tuning in. I think it's going to be a fun ride tonight. Thanks for being here for the Vibrational Voyage. Be right back. Oh, I've got to say thank you to Robert Evans and my friend Kenny Elvin, who shared this music with me. The artist is 808, and the CD is called Entropy. I play it frequently. You hear it pretty much every time I open the show and close the show for many, many months now. So I want to say thank you for that music. Thank you, Robert. One of the things that's happening right now is there's a – and you've heard me talking about it over the recent weeks because it's pretty amazing. There's a really rare alignment that's happening presently. Jupiter and Uranus are together at the eastern equinox point of the spring equinox. And that's where the moon's going to be tomorrow night, because it's full moon. Actually, full moon will be early Thursday morning. But tomorrow's the equinox, and the moon will be opposing the sun. And so where the moon will be positioned, that's where Jupiter and Uranus are. They're over by the spring equinox, and the sun will be at the autumnal equinox. And the sun's very close to Saturn. Saturn has actually been in an exact opposition with Jupiter and Uranus during the recent months. And almost for two full years, Saturn has been opposing Uranus. That only happens once every 45 years or so. And so as Saturn has been moving through Virgo up towards Libra, we've been having Saturn and Uranus opposed to one another. Well, what also makes this amazing is that right now Pluto is exactly at the place where its orbit crosses the galactic equator, And so, though although Pluto has made its closest approach to the galactic center, and it's already crossed over into Capricorn, it's currently at about 3 degrees. It's been as much as about 5 degrees of Capricorn. Because of the angle of its orbit, only now is it making its last exact alignment with the galactic equator. To me, that's very interesting, considering the, just the sheer volume of interesting and transformative events that we have going on in our world. And this time, just to me, the 2010 in general seems to me to be a year where a lot of things get connected, a lot of connections, a lot of new openings, a lot of new experiences. It's certainly been that way for me. To me, it seems as though anything that might be happening 2 years from now in 2012 is almost certainly here in a small degree, at least in a small degree. And I would say 2010 is strong evidence for that. Well, so I'll lay the numbers out for you here really quickly. If you've heard me say it before, I beg your patience and indulgence. But it's just really significant, the timing. Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus have a 180-year cycle for all three of them to come together. That happens occasionally. And so every 180 years, they wind up in an arrangement like they are right now, where Saturn is opposite to Jupiter and Uranus at one time. Jupiter and Uranus are together and Saturn is opposite. Now, because this happens every 180 years, it happens in a regular pattern as Saturn, Uranus, and Jupiter are kind of slowly moving around the entire sky. In order to make the full circle, to get to the point where Saturn comes back to the autumnal equinox point and Jupiter and Uranus are at the spring equinox point, this only happens with this arrangement. This only happens once every 1,100 years. It takes 680-year cycles for this pattern to complete a full cycle of the zodiac. And so what we have now, extraordinary as it may seem, this timing, we have Saturn over in the west, and it's just joining the sun right now. The sun is actually going to be exactly together with Saturn on September 30th, so we have a little over a week until that alignment happens. But at the same time, we're having Uranus and Jupiter, and they're fairly close together and almost exactly at the spring equinox point, maybe a fraction of a degree back in Pisces. And very close. I think it was just the other day there was another conjunction. And then, Jupiter is going to back up some more because it is retrograde right now. It's just hit the opposition with the sun. So we're basically right in the middle of the line going between the sun and Jupiter right now. So anyway, all these things are interacting while this is occurring. And because this only happens once every 1,100 years that we get Saturn over with the autumnal equinox. And that's the place where the sun begins its turn back toward winter, basically. And, of course, the spring equinox point is considered by many cultures to be the first day of the year. For instance, the Persian culture. They think of spring equinox, Nowruz, as the beginning of the new year. So that seems very significant. And Jupiter, with its energy of philosophy, it's resonant with long-distance voyages and education, and also development, growth, evolution, the strength that Jupiter has as, one of the very brightest objects in the sky. And together there with Uranus being the instigator of great discoveries and insight, and it's highly resonant with the technological evolution and revolution that we've been experiencing. And it's also highly resonant with inner evolution and revolution. So we have Jupiter, the planet of the great radiance and joy, joviality, and expansion in a great amplifying synergy with Uranus. And those two are together at the place of the new beginning, the new year, the beginning point, the point of initiation, right at the end of Pisces and the beginning of Aries. So we have this, in some ways, it's like, you know, our old pattern, which is resonant with Saturn, karma, our old patterns, the old authority, the structure that we have known, the forms that we have known, that is moving into the underworld and into its conjunction with the sun. And we have Jupiter and Uranus rising together in the east, and tomorrow night they'll rise very close to the moon, and then the moon will, full moon, equinox full moon, will conjoin them. And at the same time, we have Pluto by the galactic equator, basically making a big T, or what's called a T square, with this formation. And that brings in the resonance of rebirth and regeneration. And what is it aligned with? It's aligned with the heart of the galaxy. Isn't that interesting how all these things are moving together? It just, I have no end of fascination for this. And if it doesn't get you that excited, I thank you for listening and being patient. If it doesn't grab you to be as significant as that. One of the things with the timing, I mentioned that Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus only align like this every 1,100 years. Well, Pluto only gets with the galactic equator once every 250 years. But in order to line up the way it is right now with Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus, that would be a minimum of 5,000 years. I did a little bit of research into this. My numbers aren't that exact. But it looks to me like it's easily more than 5,000 years for Pluto to line up in this kind of a T-square arrangement with these planets. But because the winter solstice and the galactic equator are also currently aligned here, that makes it something that cannot happen more frequently than 26,000 years. And it wouldn't happen on the next 26,000-year cycle, so it's multiples of that cycle. This is an extremely rare event, and it seems to me that it moves right along with the beauty and the challenges that we have before us in this time. I think it bodes well for our attention and our recognition of how important this time is. I think it's an indication that there are great forces at work, and it is to our detriment if we're not paying attention, not attending, not seeing what's going on right now. So that seems to be something very, very important. And tomorrow night is no small event with the full moon, equinox full moon, conjunct that arrangement of Jupiter and Uranus. So definitely check that out and enjoy that. I hope it's a very fruitful evening. It's moon and Jupiter is very joyful. It's a great time for celebration. But it's also a wonderful time for prayers, and full moon in general is a wonderful time for prayers, for asking for the things that we feel we most truly and deeply need, not just for ourselves, but for our world. So it's a wonderful time for a prayer and a celebration of the beauty and the intensity of what we have going on. Speaking of which, our good friend Terence McKenna did so much wonderful work related to time cycles. He actually says in this piece that he feels that this is kind of one of the very few things that he did that was actually his own original work. So we're going to hear some of his, it's really just highlights of his work with what he called Time Wave Zero. He spent years developing the research and then the supporting work. It was really kind of a lifelong effort. So let's listen to this. I think it's just be a wonderful treat, and we'll come back, and there's two segments, and It runs a total of about 23 minutes or so. I hope you really enjoy it. This is Terrence McKenna, and there's a link. I think I've already got it up tonight related to this. You can watch a video where he goes into more detail, and you should be able to find that at the Vibrational Voyage page at ncrising.com. If you go there, it should be the newest link up at the top. Anyway, so lend your ears, sit back, and let's dive into the Terrence McKenna vibe together here.
We can't even conceive of what this is. It's stranger than we can suppose. And so the cultural fury that characterizes the 20th century, the tremendous upheaval and obliterating of traditional culture, the tremendous movement of information electronically around the globe, the revolutions in physics and archaeology and linguistics, all of these things are acting to complexify our world to the point where it finally, I think, must be dawning on everyone that we are moving into a completely different kind of ontos of the relationship between man and nature. When one examines the I Ching, the King Wen sequence, what is immediately apparent after only a few minutes of inspection is that it is not simply 64 hexagrams in some random association, but rather that the hexagrams occur in pairs. The second term of each pair is the inversion of the previous hexagram. And there are eight cases where the natural structure of the hexagram makes its inversion ineffective in changing any of the lines. In other words, there are eight cases where inverting a hexagram effects no change. The pairs of hexagrams that are then placed into opposing positions vis-a-vis each other add to 64. So what I believe is happening here is we are uncovering the secrets of a pre-Han occult school of numerological speculation. Now, an obvious question would be, why should the study of a 4,000-year-old Chinese divinatory system yield an insight into the structure of felt experience in the here and now? The reason, I believe, is that this pre-Zhou Chinese psychology that was being practiced was, in fact, immensely sophisticated, even by modern standards, and that using techniques which would anticipate the later development of yoga in India, perhaps using psychotropic substances, these early Chinese Taoist shamans were penetrating to the very organizational foundation of matter itself. What this is essentially an energy structure drawn out of a mathematical analysis of the King Wen sequence. Here is the fractal pattern that is typical of the entire wave. It happens to show up at certain levels. And the notion is that throughout the wave, when it is moving downward, novelty, density of connection is increasing. So the general conclusion from these screens is that novelty is being increased and conserved as we move through time. Now, for instance, in this screen, which is further closure with today, we see 562 million years, virtually the entire career of higher life forms on the planet. 8,500 years on the screen, the great Proto-Egyptian civilization, Sumer, Chaldea are strung out like pearls along this plunge. Egypt culminates that ancient hierarchical form of dominator society. Mycenaean pirates plunder Minoan Crete at this point. Here we have the Periclean Age in Athens. Here we have the Augustinian Age in Rome. Down here we have the Roman collapse, and then the oscillating around a mean in a high novelty domain that has characterized time since the fall of the Roman Empire. The Dark Ages is here. The 10th century Islam is here. The Black Death, the discovery of America, the European Enlightenment, World War II. Adolf Hitler becomes Chancellor of Germany. The atom bomb is dropped on Hiroshima. The summer of love is up here. Then the Reagan era stretches down through here. And the moment that we're currently living through is right down in here. This is a span of time from 1991 to 1997. So upon the basis of this screen, we can make a series of predictions of a sort about what will go on in the 1990s. And what it's showing us is that there is a punctated, slightly recidivist movement coming across here through 92, an American election late in 92. Then this span of time here, in contrast to the domains around it, looks like a fairly conservative period, which ends spectacularly in May of 96 or so, when something happens which propels the entire wave into a deeper level of novelty than it has ever displayed before. What I'm going to show you here is the final terminus of the wave in 2012. Now remember, this is the same wave we've been looking at in all our discussion before, but finally the wave not only descends deep into novelty, it descends into the maximum possible depth of novelty, which is signified by the horizontal scale of the graph. In other words, and then it ceases. The wave is damped. If you think of the wave as an oscillation, well then this is its fixed point, and presumably its other fixed point is the birth of the universe. It's like a navigational device for a time machine that has yet to be built. When time machines are built, they will have to have something like this set in the dashboard to navigate through time, because time has many scales and many densities. So I'm confident that what we're doing here, creating models for new technologies that allow the human mind, if not eventually the human body, to explore higher dimensional space, not as an abstraction, but as the fabric of their own lives and the life of the culture and cultures in which we are all embedded. Now, one thing we haven't talked about that's probably worth talking about is somebody pointed out that the pattern recurs. That lays the basis for a theory of resonance. So that, for instance, here I'll stop this so we can talk about it. If you have a perfect memory, you may recall that many screens ago we looked at a pattern like this, and I said Çatalhöyük was here, and Ur, Chaldea, Sumer, and Egypt were ranged along here. Well, this is the lower resonance of that. The idea being then that historical periods are in fact shaped by the historical period that they are in resonance with by this theory. So, for example, remember how I said the pyramids were built right down here, or the Great Pyramid at Giza? Well, if we look on this resonance, what we discover right down there is the rise of Nazi Germany. Now,
saying that Nazi Germany is a resonance of pharaonic Egypt may at first seem counterintuitive until you start thinking about it, and then here's what you come up against. Egypt invented the idea of the God-King leader. The word Pharaoh and the word Führer are thought by some people to have a common etymological root. The Egyptians also were the first people to really commit themselves to state-supported massive projects in the domain of tasteless architecture. This was something the Nazis were hugely into. Both used slave labor to build their massive and tasteless architectural constructions, and amazingly enough, both leaned heavily on the Jews for this labor. And yet, separated by thousands of years, operating in different parts of the earth, but curiously connected by this wave generated out of the I Ching. I find this kind of thing very, very interesting. As an example, the day Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait, I rushed to the computer to check the resonance. Resonance, birth of Mohammed. Same, same. Couldn't differentiate. So clearly, and so what happened in both cases is that people in a certain part of the world made an enormous surge forward into self-expression, if you want. And the whole Gulf War crisis paralleled the life of Mohammed. And when Mohammed died, the war was over. It was born at the resonance of his birth, and it was completed at the resonance of his death. I find this kind of thing very suggestive and quite uncanny. We are living through, in a 67-year period that stretches from 1945 to 2012, a compressed version of a larger historical epoch, 4,306 years long, that also ends in 2012, so that we have reached, by this reckoning, the late 700s right now. This is what we are living through. And ahead of us lies the Gothic Renaissance, the Renaissance, the European Enlightenment, the discovery of the Newtonian mechanics, the discovery of the New World. That all lies ahead of us. It all has to be compressed into the next 22 years of time. And that is what accounts for the crazy quality of modernity. It's what accounts for fads and fashions. You know, hemlines are rising and falling in a rhythm based on the rise and fall of empires millennia ago. And these things are as causally linked as the orbit of the Earth is linked to the sun, you see. Because we are being drawn toward the attractor through shorter and shorter epochs. And not only must the entire last 4,000 years of history be compressed into this 67-year period from 1945 to 2012, but there is a 384-day period preceding December 22, 2012, when the last 67 years and the last 4,300 years have to be compressed into that. Then there's a final six-day period when all of these things are compressed again. And so do you see what's happening? The spiral is tightening as it goes faster and faster. The resonances are impinging. The thing is getting nuttier and nuttier and nuttier as computers link all cultures together, all informational barriers dissolve, everything is becoming connected to everything else, not only everything in the present moment, but all past moments as well are being drawn, compressed, squeezed toward the production of the transcendental object at the end of time, which is nothing less than all time, all space, shrunk down to an atomic dimension and handed back to us. Do you see? The way Joyce constructed Ulysses was he had a character who was walking around Dublin in a fog trying to buy some kidneys to fry for breakfast, and Joyce made of his peregrination from one seedy bar to butcher shop Bordello. And back, Bordello, he overlaid it over the geography of the Mediterranean and the chronology of the Homeric Wars, the Trojan Wars, and produced a novel which was in resonance with a much larger historical period. I believe this is how reality really works. I mean, I have a saying, Rome falls 9 times an hour. And what it's your job to be sensitive to this. You can feel it when it falls. You can feel the rise of Chaldea, the spread of the Slavic peoples, the burning of Çatalhöyük while you're vacuuming your apartment.
Or having sex.
All that stuff that's cycling. Those aren't your thoughts. Those are the thoughts of the Gaian matrix as these resonances mesh and reflect and work their way against each other. Nazi Germany down here, World War II fought across the bottom of this trough. After World War II, everybody was sick to death of novelty. They'd seen about all of it they could stand. Death camps, radar, V-2 rockets, propaganda, radio, massive displacement of populations, eugenics, thousand-year genetic control myths, master race theory, enough. Already. And after Germany was kicked to pieces, all people wanted to do was go home, have some kids, mow the lawn, put their feet up, and watch the game. And they did that. And this is the post-war reconstruction era where the stress is all about, let's get back to normal. That was even a motto after 1945, return to normalcy, and so forth. But then there are these little stumbles along the way called Sputnik, assassination of John F. Kennedy, so forth and so on. And then as you come across the top, right here, the great turning point, 1967, 68, you've got it all. You've got LSD, you've got a youth revolution, you have technology reaching for the moon. Literally, and the moon landing is right there, right there. So, and then it all, and that whole, the 60s obviously blew the lid off of things and started a descent into novelty in which we are still experiencing and reeling from. It's a direct resonance to Homeric Greece. And the hippies did have a Grecian quality. I mean, all those barefoot people in robes practicing their vegetarianism and playing their flutes and gathering in green spots. Now notice that I have not reconfigured the wave from the first time when I set it for 6 billion years. We've come through planetary dynamics, we've come through evolutionary dynamics, we've come through the dynamics of ancient civilization. We now only have 5 years and 7 months on the screen. And what have we got? Okay, I'll show you what we've got. First of all, George Bush is elected right here, which means that Ronald Reagan leaves office. Right here. This is the absolute resonance for the fall of the Roman Empire. And Ronald Reagan clearly is the carrier of that energy, the imperial style, the well, the whole tone of the thing was Roman. Now, the thing, now we have to account for this. What is this low point? It's Tiananmen Square on the money. And if you don't think that was a novel event, try to picture it. 2 million people crowd into the capital city of the largest governmental entity on the planet and bring it to a screeching halt until it finds a solution, mass murder, the most traditional solution to these kinds of problems, and then the wave turns up. There's nothing novel about murdering large numbers of people. That is the traditional response to many situations. Okay, Tiananmen Square is there. The next thing we have to account for is right there.
I believe that dangers await only those who do not react to life.
Berlin Wall comes down right there on the money, on the day, right there. Okay. That little saddle there, the absolute resonance to the birth of Mohammed. It's the day Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait. This is the only original idea that I have ever come up with. The rest is just telling you what Schultes and Hoffman and everybody knows and what you could find out by spending time in a good medical library. This is original. And my notion of what the psychedelic experience is for is that we each must become like fishermen and go out onto the dark ocean of mind and let your nets down into that sea. And what you're after is not some behemoth that will tear through your nets, foul them, and drag you and your little boat, you know, into the abyss. Nor are what we're looking for a bunch of sardines that can slip through your net and disappear. Ideas like, have you ever noticed that your little finger exactly fits your nostril? And stuff like that. What we are looking for are middle-sized ideas that are not so small that they're trivial and not so large that they're incomprehensible, but middle-sized ideas that we can wrestle into our boat and take back to the folks on shore and have fish dinner. And every one of us, when we go into the psychedelic state, this is what we should be looking for. It's not for your elucidation. It's not part of your self-directed psychotherapy. You are an explorer, and you represent our species. And the greatest good you can do is to bring back a new idea, because our world is endangered by the absence of good ideas. Our world is in crisis because of the absence of consciousness. And so to whatever degree any one of us can bring back a small piece of the picture and contribute it to the building of the new paradigm, then we participate in the redemption of the human spirit. And that, after all, is what it's really all about. That's it, folks. Thank you very much.
That was Terence McKenna doing a couple segments from his Time Wave Zero presentation. And I had a couple other thoughts I wanted to share with you about that. But one of the things that really got my attention with what Terence was saying there, I really love the point that he was making about when we do these types of adventures, what we are really hopefully doing as a result is we're bringing something back. Bring something back that we can all chew on together. And I love the way you put that. You know, it's highly resonant with Joseph Campbell's message about the hero's journey, that the real point of making the adventure is to go on whatever quest life brings to us, the very best journey that we can make, and to return all the way back and bring back the blessings and the benefits of our adventure. so that we can share it with the rest of the community. To me, that's a very interesting thing that he highlighted there. Another thing I just have to connect there for a minute is one of the things that he was pointing out with the, to me, this whole thing about the fractal nature of time. Interestingly, he wasn't basing his time wave on anything to do with the Mayan calendar. And he only discovered the Mayan calendar, long count calendar, had an end date with December 21st, 2012, after he independently arrived at that date as the end point for the time wave. Well, interestingly, the Mayan calendar also shows, because of its alignment with astronomical events, it also shows a resonance with the notion, and it appears to show that time is fractal, just the same way that the time wave does. And so one of the things that hits me with this is that any place we see fractility, you know, we can certainly see it in atoms. You know, you see atoms and molecular structures, and then you see the way crystals take shape. Well, that's a repeated fractal form at different scales, at different magnitudes. Well, you know, here's something that to me seems like one of these self-evident things. You try it on for yourself. Anything that's fractal is fractal with everything else that's fractal. So any manifestation of fractality is going to have a resonance with everything else that's fractal. And it's interesting, Terence was saying that in time, what this fractal wave shows us is that our experience at this moment has a resonance with other points in time. And he said, for instance, there are different scales of this wave. The basic wave is 384 days. It's a 64-day pattern that repeats six times. So that's 384 days. So he gets his 67-year wave, the 67-year pattern. All you do is you multiply 384 days times 64. That's how you get that. And then he said there's a 4,300-year pattern. Well, that's just 67 years times 64. Again, it scales out in a very regular way. Although it seems to have a linear pattern to it in that sense, the wave itself has a very, he called it a fractal shape, but it kind of looks in many ways like it kind of seems to have what would be the word, kind of a geometric scale to it, the way it suddenly goes, you know, along very gently for a while, and then it'll do a deep dive towards novelty. So it's very interesting. One of the things that he was saying there is our current position. He was talking back, I think that was actually like 1991, 1992. And so he was talking about the resonance to the wave, the 4,300 year wave, and where we are in the scale of human history in the current wave that we're in, the 67-year wave that we're in. You know, compare that to the 4,300-year wave. Well, you know, I did the math this evening, and I'm sure I'm not exactly where Terence would put us if we had the benefit of his insight, but probably close enough for discussion. It would seem that we're about 144 years in that away from the end point. So in that 4,300-year cycle, if we compress that down into 67 years and kind of take the proportion, then we're in a resonance right now. Here we are, just 2 years, 2.25 years from the end date, right? So that actually is equivalent to about 144 years in the bigger cycle, in the 4,300-year cycle. So that takes us back to 1868. And I thought, okay, well, what was going on in 1868? Of course, just a few years before that, the Civil War had ended. But that year, the typewriter was patented. The eight-hour workday was legislated in the United States. There was a former slave installed as the governor of Louisiana. That was Oscar J. Dunn. Queen Isabella II of Spain had to flee to France because of an uprising that was going on in her country. Cuba revolted against Spain for its independence in that year. And Ulysses Grant was elected president. Jesse James was doing his thing. He was robbing banks during that time period. And at the same time, there were innovations in education. We had the University of California was founded. Brigham Young marries his 27th wife during that year. And also the San Francisco SPCA is founded in that year. So you see there's quite a collection of different things that are going on. One thing relative to that whole resonance pattern thing, Terence is saying that throughout the course of history, there are resonances with where we are right now and other points in experience. Well, if we have resonances with our past, doesn't it also seem possible and interesting to consider that we may have resonances with what comes out beyond where we are right now? There may be much larger scales of experience that we have not yet remembered or seen or experienced, but apparently those would also be connected with us. His whole picture of the time wave is how everything is ultimately compressed into the now, and we're experiencing what we are, and it's being affected by what lies ahead of us. So those larger potentials would certainly also be resonant with our experience here as well. And literally, Terence is saying that those larger potentials somehow are reverberating back to us through the near future that lies right in front of us. So it was a very interesting discussion. I thought it'd be just wonderful to present that to you tonight for the equinox.